Ever since Abner Doubleday put a ball and a stick together, baseball has been this country's favorite pastime. But for some, it's more than just a game. Every summer, top college baseball players come up to Alaska to spend weeks playing in one of six amateur teams. And some of these players catch the eye of big league scouts. Hello, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. And today we're talking baseball, more specifically, the Alaska Baseball League and the Scout Showcase that's getting started soon. But first, let me introduce my guests. Here in the studio, Gary Lichtenstein, who is Baseball Operations Director for the Anchorage Bucks, one of two teams here in Anchorage. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Ellen. Good to be here.
Okay, we're glad to have you here, too. And later on in the show, we'll bring in Mr. Pete Christopher, and he is manager of the Matsu Miners. We're reaching him by phone as we speak. And so first, I want to mention here that maybe Abner Doubleday's connection to baseball is disputed by historians, but the legend that the first baseball game was played in a cow pasture could be true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's appropriate for Alaska anyway, only here we play in moose pastures. How did the Bucks get started? Because I know that there was the Glacier Pilots and then there was the Bucks, Gary. So
right.
How did that all come about?
Oh, in 1980, Adult League was formed by our current general manager, Dennis Mattingly. The Adult League was rather successful and challenged some teams in the Alaska Baseball League. And a few teams refused to play us, and Gold Panthers agreed to play us. We went down to Fairbanks and did rather well against them and eventually was accepted into the league officially as the Cook Inlet Bucks when we started in 1980.
So 20 years down the line, though, you're the Anchorage Bucks. And let's talk right. A little bit about the Alaska Baseball League in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, historically, it all got started in Fairbanks with Red Boucher and the Gold Panthers. Do you know that story?
Well, in 1960.
Yeah, in the 60s.
1960, the Gold Panthers formed. They were playing baseball in Fairbanks prior to that. That's why they have the Midnight Sun game. They stayed as 100 years old, basically. But in 1960, the Panthers formed. Red Boucher, who was an incredible man and still considered the father of the Alaska Baseball League, put together the Gold Panthers, and they invited teams up. They traveled, and they went to Japan, if I remember correctly. They were showcasing and barnstorming and managed to put together a very competitive collegiate prior to pro baseball team. And many professional baseball players came out of the Gold Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, the Gold Panthers, the senior team, probably has the most major league players that have come out of that program.
Well, let's back up a little on Red Boucher. For those of you listening who don't know, he was an ex-Navy man and a fine technician and I guess had an adventurous streak, came up to Alaska in the, 1960 or just about then, and got himself a little piece of land, decided to settle down in Fairbanks, and decided that he needed to start a baseball team, and it turned out to be the Fairbanks Gold Panthers, which are sort of the matrix of the Alaska mm-hmm. Baseball League. And over the years, the Gold Panthers started looking for local teams to play. And since there weren't any, they had to invent some. And so one of them became the Valley Green Giants, which has evolved today into the Matsu Miners. But mm-hmm. we'll get back to that in a minute. Right now, I wanted to ask Gary about how many of the Bucks are college players versus local players. Do you have a mixture, or is there?
Well, the vast majority of the league in general, but the Bucks in particular, are college players from all around the United States, including Taiwan. We have two current players from University of Taiwan on our team, and league rules allows us to carry four local players. That's it. So we have currently on our Bucks three local. And we always encourage local players for a number of reasons. It helps our visiting players get an understanding of the city and where to go to eat and where to stay away from. And it sort of allows them. We have family homes that house the players,
mm-hmm.
Like all the other teams do. And it's good to have local people involved in our team.
Right, local people, local fans, local business.
Local fans, yeah.
So how did the college connection get going anyway, at least for the Bucks? I mean, I understand in the beginning, like the Gold Panthers were not a college team. They were local people.
Mm-hmm.
But they must have attracted people from out of the state to keep
At the time, the Gold Panthers started. You know, we talked originally, Ellen, about how many now summer collegiate baseball teams there were. But at the time, there were none. I mean, Gold Panthers were the premier one. When the Alaska Baseball League formed, there were only maybe three or four summer leagues. Now, I'm guessing maybe over 20 summer mm-hmm. leagues. So in the beginning, we made a lot of contacts with major college coaches. And they would be the ones who would want their players, especially their star players, to continue to play baseball during the summer rather than go home and rest. So they would refer their players to us. As the league developed, and we're a developmental league, not just for players, but for umpires, for coaches' staff, we have spread out throughout the college world. We have major coaches and major programs, UCLA, various universities who used to coach for us. So with those connections spread out throughout the United States, and now I'm saying foreign countries, we develop our scouting and our contacts and our referrals for various players.
And, of course, this ABL has been around for the better part now of 50 years.
Yes.
So it's established.
It's considered one of the premier summer collegiate leagues in the country.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get at your how does one put together a baseball team. You said the Bucks started in the 80s. There was already the Anchorage Glacier Pilots, but it looked like there was room for another team.
Mm-hmm.
How did you recruit those initial members of the Bucks?
Basically by personal contact. Like I mentioned, our general manager, Dennis Mattingly, has a vast experience in baseball, had many contacts, and asked players to come up and enjoy Alaska. And Alaska is very unique, and we had no problem enticing players to come to Alaska, especially those who like the outdoors and fishing. And when they started coming up, I remember Wally Joyner coming up, and those people who remember Wally World, he was a star for us. He went on to major league career. But that once you start developing, we had the infrastructure set up. We had the busing. We had the fields. We had the ability to transport. And we also had, like I said, the uniqueness of Alaska that attracted these players.
Hmm. So right away, you gathered enough people to have a really decent baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at your website earlier. You're
yes.
playing the Gold Panthers tonight. You're playing the Oilers tomorrow, and then AIA, and then the Gold Panthers again. I mean, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like you even have any off days.
No, we don't. And that's, in a way, one of the draws of our league. We're very competitive. We have a grueling schedule, somewhat similar to the minor leagues and Major League Baseball. The scouts like to see how these young men adapt to a schedule that's so grueling versus a college schedule, which maybe they play two or three games a week. Here we play at least six, seven. We go to Fairbanks the next week. We play 9 games in 7 days on the road. So it's a grueling schedule, and the scouts take that into consideration when they're watching these young men play.
Mm-hmm.
How they're dealing with the schedule, the busing, the travel, the change in locations, the housing, the stress that's caused on them.
Mm.
It's dramatic.
Wow. So let's take a moment to remind our listeners that Hometown Alaska is a call-in show. So you can call in if you have questions about the Alaska Baseball League for either of our guests. Call 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. Or if you're at your PC, email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember, you can check kska.org for any information about today's show. And we have been successful in reaching Pete Christopher. He is the manager, general manager of the Mat-Su Miners, and they too have a grueling schedule. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Pete.
Hi, Pete. It's Gary.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Good, Pete.
It looks like the Miners have a game tonight. I guess they're playing, what, AIA?
Right.
Okay, so Pete's talking to us from Palmer. And we wanted to bring you in a little bit on this conversation about recruiting your college players. How do you get them? Is it, Gary saying it's a lot of personal contact?
Yeah, it took a few years to build up contacts. Going to the American Baseball Coaches Association convention, meeting college coaches, and then each team has probably a core of schools that they deal with exclusively to get players, and then you build up a rapport with the coach, and you trust him when he says he's got a guy that can play in the Alaska League. You got to believe him because he sent you players before that were pretty good. And then it's research and going on the computer and collegiate baseball and Baseball America and all scouting services. It's a lot of homework you have to do.
Uh-huh. And do most of these athletes that do come up to play in Alaska, do they pretty much pan out?
Pan out. Well, you know, the success rate for a minor leaguer becoming a major leaguer is like 97% failure rate. So like only 3 out of 100 kids that play minor league ball get to the major leagues. So, you know, every year if they move up a level every year, they're probably going to make it. You know, over a 4-year period, they could probably be up to AAA. That's pretty good.
Huh. So, Pete, I wanted to ask you, and I'll ask Gary the same question. How do you maintain the strength of your team if every single year you get a new group of players? Or does some return? How does that work?
Well, that's a good question. It goes back to good coaching, the recruiting, keeping the kids happy. Monday we had a day off, so they went whitewater rafting. Stuff like that. The team chemistry is real important. Mm-hmm. I think anyway. They could be the best ball players in the world. If they don't click with each other, you're going to have problems. Don't you think, Gary?
I agree. The Alaska baseball league, like I mentioned earlier, in Alaska being unique, that attracts players. But Pete's right. Each individual team has maintained contacts with various universities across the country, including outside of the country. And to looking at the Alaska baseball league, Pete, I'm guessing close to, at this point, 450, 500 have been in the major leagues through our league.
At least.
Yeah. And just that alone, that reputation alone, is a draw to Alaska, knowing we play this competitive brand of baseball.
It's probably the number 2 collegiate summer league in the country behind the Cape. And they're probably 40 or 50 summer collegiate leagues now, whereas maybe 15 years ago there were 5 or 6 or 10, you know. So in the last few years, a lot of leagues have been popping up. So the competition to find quality ball players gets tougher.
But baseball is as strong as ever. What do the players gain in Alaska that they maybe couldn't gain in, a camp in or summer league in, say, California or some other state? Is there more here or what?
If I can answer that, Peter, one of the things they gain is the competitive and grueling schedule they face up here. And I had mentioned before how the scouts like to see how these young men deal with the schedule that we have up here, which is incredible. And Pete knows this as well as I do. Also, they have the experience of Alaska. A lot of these young men like to fish or hunt. Or like Pete mentioned, we send our guys, the Bucks, do on a halibut fishing trip on a day off, although there's not many day offs. They get the exposure to a highly competitive league. They know scouts are going to see them. And they also have the confidence that the Alaska League has the infrastructure to maintain a league, has the transportation, has the fields, and has the staff ready to help them develop.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's a documentary film, Touching the Game, which is details the Alaska Baseball League and many of the college players who come here over the years. And there's one segment about the Peninsula Oilers, where their team is put up pretty much in the back of a bingo hall. And
right, the Bingo Hilton.
Bingo Hilton.
I love it.
I love that too. The guys loved it too. They would be playing bingo when they weren't playing ball. So these scouts come up, and they will be here pretty soon, a couple
starting,
of days.
Starting Friday.
Friday.
This Friday, the Scout Showcase.
And what's, tell us, Gary, what is a Scout Showcase
Well, you
all
know, Ellen, it originally started as a tournament. The Alaska Baseball League actually didn't start out as a wood bat league. We then had what we called the wood bat tournament. And that was to put all the teams together in the league, put them in one place. Right now it's Mulcahy Stadium. So the scouts who come up in mass don't have to travel the entire state to see the people they're looking at, the prospective players, prospective signees that they're looking at. And we have, and I think it was, maybe 10 years ago, we switched to wood bat for that reason, too, because the scouts want to see how these young players deal with wood bat. It's a different game in some ways with wood in your hand than it is with aluminum that they use in college. So the Scout Showcase is a 3-day event. There are 3 games a day, 6 teams involved, and it's a showcase for the Major League Scouts.
Right.
And also it's league games, so they are counted within our league schedule as games.
Yeah, I personally sent out invitations to all 30 teams and the Major League Scouting Bureau back in February, and I sent the schedule, told them when the tournament was going to be, so their area scouts could make plans to be up here for like 4 or 5 days,
mm-hmm.
And that's how it got going.
Let's take a brief review of who's in the Alaska Baseball League. Currently, there are 6 teams, and it looks like the Fairbanks Gold Panners, the Mat-Su Miners, the Peninsula Oilers, and then there's the Anchorage Bucks, and the missing one, the AIA. What are they?
AIA Fire out of Fairbanks. Athletes in Action, yes.
Athletes in Action. Do I get them all there? Okay, that's 6. And we have, they play each other, and who's mm-hmm. on top? Who's the top?
Currently?
Top guy.
I have the standings right in front of me, Pete. currently it's the Gold Panthers out of Fairbanks, the Alaska Gold Panthers out of Fairbanks. They're followed by you, Pete, just a half a game out. Mat-Su Miners in second place.
Mm-hmm.
Kenai Oilers 2.5 games out. And then there's a major shift here. Our team, the Bucks that I represent, are 10 games out at this point, followed by the Anchorage Glacier Pilots 13 and the Fire 13 games out. So we have 3 on the top and 3 on the bottom. And, you know, we're very competitive, and we tend to just switch from year to year who's leading and who's not. And it's such a short season, Ellen, and Pete knows this. You go into one losing streak, it's devastating sometimes.
How short is the season?
It's 2 months.
That's
2 months, yeah.
So we're approaching the end. The scouts
yep.
are here, and the mm-hmm. the players have honed their skills, hopefully, and are top form. So, and like I was saying earlier, the Mat-Su Miners have a game tonight at 6, Pete?
Right.
Whereabouts?
I don't have lights at my field, so around July 15th, I make all my evening games start at 6. I change it from 7, just in case a game runs a couple of innings late, we still have enough light to play, because I hate suspended games.
Yeah, that's why all your fans bring flashlights, right, Pete?
Yeah, right.
And that would be at the Herman Brothers is your
on
baseball
field? On the Alaska
field?
Fairgrounds property, right, okay. Herman Brothers Field.
Okay, and that we'll talk about that in a little bit. And Gary, the Bucks are playing tonight. Now, who are they playing?
We have a doubleheader, actually, Ellen. We play the Fairbanks Gold Panthers at 6 o'clock start,
okay.
2 games. At Mulcahy Stadium.
And that is your home turf?
Yes, Mulcahy? It is. We share that with the Glacier Pilots, and we are home today against the Panthers.
How did you wind up with back-to-back doubleheaders?
Well, that was a scheduled doubleheader. Pete, yesterday we played a doubleheader also against the Panthers.
Right.
One was a makeup game for a rainout, so we had back-to-back doubleheaders.
Yeah, the Miners are looking for help from the Bucks.
I know. We'll try to tire them out.
Yeah, thanks.
And Gary's brought some half-off tickets to the Bucks game tonight in Anchorage if anyone wants to stop off at KSKA and pick a couple up. So I'd like to remind our listeners again that Hometown Alaska is a call-in program, and you can call in at 550-8433, 550-8433, or 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometownalaska@ksKA.org. And of course, you can get all the information you need about the ABL and today's program on Hometown Alaska on ksKA.org. So let's talk a little bit about the funding. Baseball is not cheap. Where do these teams get money?
Pete? You want to take that? Okay. I'll tell you what the minors do. Five of the six teams rely on gaming. I believe we're all 501c3 nonprofits, and we all have gaming licenses, and the gaming constitutes a big chunk of our operating budget. And also, we sell programs, merchandise, billboards, print ads in the program, stuff, and revenue from selling tickets at the gate. Mm-hmm. And it costs around a little over $200,000 to run the minors. Mm-hmm. A year.
Yeah. Now, are the college players who come up here, do they pay their own way, or do they have sponsors, does that work?
Yeah, as you know, the last couple of years, the airfares are really starting to take mm-hmm. off and get expensive, and the minors started charging each player 25% of the ticket and to help cover the cost of the tickets. We have a big fundraiser in April called a Grand Slam Raffle, and where we sell 400, it used to be 325 $100 tickets. And that used to bring in enough money for the airfare and a whole bunch of other stuff, and now it doesn't even cover the cost of the airfare because it could run you $23,000 or $25,000 for airfare. Mm-hmm. So we got the players to start paying part of that.
How about food and lodging?
They stay with host families. We go out. We try to find good, clean host families. You know, you got to make sure the kid gets fed. You know, sometimes you put him in a home, he doesn't get fed as often as he should. Little problems come up. Finding good housing is really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the heart. That's really the heart of our league is family, summer families.
Right.
But like Pete mentioned, the gaming is very important to the Bucks, too. And you can find our kiosk in the Diamond Center. We sell 50-50 raffles. I know the miners are involved with that. Hey, Pete, we haven't gone to 25% yet, but that's an idea.
But yeah, it just got tough. We're in the smallest market, so we really have to hustle to cover everything. And that we had to do that to get by.
Oh, I agree. The prices are getting, increasing. And you talk about flying kids and the logistics of flying young players up here from all over and getting them here on time and getting them back on time is quite expensive.
Right. So you're considered nonprofits, both of you are nonprofit businesses?
The whole league.
Yeah, yep. The whole league. So you don't have to at least pay a lot in taxes, but you wouldn't have a lot left over to pay in taxes
anyway. Well, also being a 501c3, you know, you can apply for grants, mm-hmm. which we've done over the last few years. We only became a 501c3 about 3 years ago, and it opened up a whole avenue of revenue opportunities for us, and we're really happy about it.
Well, how about the fans? What's their? I mean, obviously they go to the stands and they pay their $5. And I want to say this: the games are what $5 to get in both fields.
My field is $4.
$4. That is an incredibly reasonable price for I think one of the most fun things you can do on a summer evening.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the fans act as volunteers as well. It would seem to me there'd be a lot of volunteer opportunity working with these teams.
Yeah, each team has a board of directors that are volunteer, and that board usually has many active members who help out on the field and with the housing and with the transportation and a myriad of responsibilities. It's amazing. The game on the field is fun. And the game on the field is pretty much solid. It's what's happening around that game that requires the most work. And I think Pete knows that.
Right. I'm the only paid employee of the minors. Everything's done with volunteers, the concession stand, the ticket booth. My assistant GM, Bob Plumlee, he's a volunteer. He's retired. He's Mr. Fix-It. I mean, the volunteers, I know out in the valley, are just fantastic. So we couldn't survive without them.
Right. I remember once I interviewed you quite a few years ago, Pete, and you told me that the miners were at one time so poor that they had to cut the grass on the playing field with, like, hand mowers. I had this vision of all of these guys out there pushing hand mowers. Yeah. So, but you managed to survive. And what is it that always it keeps that baseball mania alive somehow? I can hear I live near Mulcahy, and I can see later in the summer when it does get dark, the lights are on, you can hear the cheers, you can hear the hubbub.
Well, you know, I congratulate Pete tremendously. I think it's up to the individual general managers of each individual team and their pride in the league that keeps this league going and keeps it surviving, and their ability to make contacts, local or otherwise, to help. And we rely on a lot of local companies to provide us with services and sponsorship. And there are people who continue to help us and realize the importance of the league. It's not only important in terms of these young college players. And like I mentioned earlier, Alan, it's a developmental league for umpires and future college coaches and possibly major league coaches, but also for the community. I know the minors put on a clinic for the little league players. We do. The Bucks do. We provide entertainment for the entire family. We go out to the community and make a lot of donations and time and effort into this community.
Do you get at that back in community support and business support? You mentioned the businesses, Gary, other than like advertising at the arena itself. I mean, what kind of support do they give you?
Oh, well, you know, it depends on the contacts. We have various mechanical support. We have two buses that need repair. We have people that will help us with that. We have groundwork that needs to be done. We have concession issues that need to be helped out on. And we have managed over the years to make tremendous contacts with people, businessmen and otherwise in the community that volunteer the time and services and products. And that helps a lot. That helps a lot.
Pete?
What?
You got anything to say about the Matsu businesses helping out your team?
Oh, well, like I said before, they're just phenomenal. I've lived in four states and I've never been in a place like the Valley where everybody pitches in and helps. One of the first things I did when I became general manager in September of 2002 was to join the Chamber of Commerce in Wasilla and Palmer, and just to get out there and let people know what the miners were about. And we set a path, and we did a lot of renovations down at the field. Because it really needed it. It was in dire need of upkeep. And businesses pitched in, volunteers. I met most of them through Chamber. So, and then now attendance, we can get 700-800 people a game, which is pretty good for out here in the Valley. And people come up and ask, what can I do to help? So it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it looks like it's time for a brief one-minute break here at Hometown Alaska, and we will be back to talk about the upcoming Scout Showcase. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the show repeats tonight at 10. Remember, tonight's recorded rebroadcast will not be taking phone calls. Following this afternoon's broadcast, you can also find a copy of today's Hometown Alaska online at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer, and today we're talking baseball, or more specifically, the Alaska Baseball League, and my guests are Gary Lichtenstein with the Anchorage Bucks, and Pete Christopher, who is the general manager of the Mat-Su Miners. So we're looking at the Major League Scouts are coming up in a couple of days here. They'll be here all weekend, and they will be frenziedly going to quite a few games, I take it, to see if there's the talent that they are looking for out there.
Correct.
So, Gary, you want to talk to me a little bit
about
how you get ready for that?
You mentioned the speed guns before the show started, and it's kind of funny because you would sit in the grandstand and see all these scouts with speed guns, and my feeling is if you walk too fast, you may get a speeding ticket in front of them. But they love their speed guns, and they're all there representing every major league team looking at prospective talent. And this is talent that they probably know about. Occasionally, they don't know, and they discover a talent here. I can think of several players. We had Jeff Francis, who played in Canada for the Bucks, who was not known at all, but seen here and picked up by Major League Scouts and signed with the Colorado Rockies, is currently a pitcher for the Rockies. So these scouts come up to see people they've been tracking for a while and also to find talent they haven't seen or heard about. And it's a wonderful venue because they, like I said, see 9 games in 3 days and see every team in the league in one spot, Mulcahy Stadium. And I know Friday, for example, the Bucks play the AIA Fire at noon. And, Pete, you're playing the Panthers at 3:30.
Right.
And then the Oilers are playing the Pilots at 7 o'clock. And that's a lot of baseball.
That's a lot of baseball. Let's just get back to these speed guns. They don't really look like guns, but they are handheld, and they look for the most part like little round video cameras or something. The pitcher will wind up, and the batter will step up to the plate, and he's got his bat in position, and he's got his eye on the ball, and when he strikes or goes to strike, all of these little thingies,
right,
little speed guns go up.
And they look at the digital display and see how fast that pitch is coming in. Now, you know, many scouts know it's not just the speed of a pitcher. It's the movement on the ball. It's the placement of a ball. So it's not just speed, but it gives the scouts something to write down specifically. It's a concrete measurement of how fast that pitcher is throwing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often called a radar gun, similar to what the police may use when they track your car speeding.
So what are they looking for? I mean, you said a pitcher, but do they look for all-around players? Do they look like for outfielders or what kind of?
Well, Pete can add to this, but, you know, generally because pitching make up a majority of major league teams, I don't know what the percentage is. I say over 40% of a team's roster will be pitching staff. So they do look for pitchers. That's important. But they look for every position player. And like I said, currently the Bucks have 13 major leaguers. We've had guys that have been drafted in the minor leagues. They write up, like Pete mentioned, a cross-checker. They have scouts who work for more than one team who will summarize the abilities they've seen on the field. And they'll then follow these players into their college career. So it's very important for these scouts to get a sense of how these players are doing in Alaska, the pressure on them, the gruesome schedule, like I mentioned before, but they will follow them through college. And there's so many kids who want to be, it's hard. So a scout has to see them somewhere. And once they're on their quote radar gun, then that's a one step up for these players.
Right. And so, Pete, I know there's, I got a couple of Mat-Su Miner alumni in the Boston Red Sox, but there was many more, according to your website, people who have been drafted or at least selected for a draft.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? My question went right out of my head. What are they looking for?
Well, scouts, with pitchers, the first thing they look for is velocity. Then they look for a second pitch. Can he throw a second and third pitch for strikes? How's the curveball? How's the changeup? If he's right-handed, they want him to be at least 6 foot tall. Left-handers, it doesn't matter. I scouted 14 years, and I had an old-timer tell me one time, don't even take the radar gun out of the box if it's a lefty and he can get guys out, you know, because they're at a premium. But right-handers, they want him to be like 6 foot tall at least. It's very rare you see. You look at all the rosters, and you won't see many right-handers under 6 feet. With position players, they want running speed and arm strength, how well they throw, hitting ability, hitting for power, and fielding. Those are what they call five tools. And they grade them out, you know, and they put a numeric value on the five tools with a position player. The higher the numeric value, the more money you're going to get.
So a lot of your players, though, would be what, juniors in college? So they
freshmen and sophomores.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That early? So then they would go back to school and
right,
and,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay.
Pete, do you find that scouts ask you who to look for?
Who to look at? You mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, but you know, it's every scout's got his own opinion. Like you said, they know about most of these guys. So basically, these guys are cross-checking the players, like the position players. Now they're using wood instead of aluminum. And if you have a guy hitting 300 or better with wood, you know, he can hit a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. There's a major difference between getting up to the bat with aluminum versus wood.
So yeah, like with power, a ball you hit with an aluminum bat that goes 400 feet would probably only go about 360 with wood, which would be just a fly out.
Well, you know, although you mentioned earlier that they're freshmen and sophomores in college, so would they be likely to come back 2 and 3 years to, say, the Alaska, where these scouts could see them develop over the years?
If a kid is smart, he'll play a year in Alaska after his freshman year of school, and after his sophomore year, play maybe a year in the Cape, and then he's eligible for the draft his junior year.
Okay.
You know, that's what I tell kids: a year in Alaska and a year in the Cape, and then then you see how you do your junior year, and you may get drafted.
Hmm. So does draft necessarily mean a career? I mean, that's sort of the first round, right, of selection?
Yeah.
Well, the higher you go, and Gary will tell you this, the higher you go, the more attention you're going to get from the organization. It's a 50-round draft, and guys that go in the 30s and 40s and up to the 50th round, they have less – they're not looked at as closely – by the organization as a guy in the first 5 rounds or 10 rounds. So that's why a lot of guys get drafted in the 48th round, and they'll go back to school for their senior year.
For example, Pete, we had 15 guys drafted in the 2010 Major League Draft.
Right.
We had two in the 5th round. And if you remember Kevin Jacobs from last year,
right,
he went to the Yankees in the 18th round. That's because he didn't pitch much. He was injured in his last college season. So depending on how much they're playing in college and their injuries, they may get drafted higher or lower. But here's a particular pitcher that probably should have got drafted much higher, and he'll have to prove himself in the minors.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to mention, though, that we hear certain names over and over and over again in the sports news or TV or whatever, but there's many more players who maybe don't get the notoriety, but they still have a solid career. For how long? I mean, how long can a guy last in baseball?
Well, that depends. You know, you have guys like Clemens who lasted incredible length of time. Some people claim it was somewhat drug-induced lasting, but, you know, young kids get up, and you got to remember there's always someone behind you who may be bigger or better or wants to replace you. So I would say, depending on your position, you could be in the big leagues for 10 years or so.
Uh-huh.
Pete, do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, then you get a guy like Jamie Moyer, and he's been around for 25 or 26 years. So, and he throws 80 miles an hour on a good day.
Right. Jamie Moyer is very special.
Yeah.
I remember Yogi Berra. Wasn't he ancient or something and still in the Yankees?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's ancient.
Ball player.
He's a New York Yankee catcher, He had a lot of yogiisms, which we can go through.
Yeah, well,
you know, Pete's from Jersey. I'm from the Bronx, so we're familiar with the Yankees,
Long
I'm sure.
Island, so. How about you were saying yogiism. How about the voodoo? You know, is there superstitions? You always hear about these superstitions in baseball.
Baseball players are the most superstitious bunch of athletes you'll ever find.
Well, correct. Tell us about a few of the superstitions.
Well, I got one right off the top of my head. I got a crowbar, a big one. It was given to me as a gift, and I got it down at the field in the field shack that's connected to the field where we keep the lawnmower and the all the stuff to chalk the lines for the field and all the rakes. Well, I guess it was about a week ago, they had it, and they kept it. For some reason, they kept it in the dugout, and we won. Well, it's been in the dugout before every game since then.
Yep.
They won't put it away.
And Pete's not even talking about the unclean underwear.
But yeah, and the clothing. Forget it. The hygiene, out the window.
Right. You're winning, you don't wash your clothes. I'll tell you one that happened yesterday. You know, we had one the day before, and our batting coach had a pencil and was keeping records of the batting, and the pencil broke in half. And instead of getting a new pencil the next day because we won, he had to tape it up and because it was a winning pencil, and we have plenty of pencils.
How about the hand signals and the chewing? I was noticing in this documentary, Touching the Game, that they chewed, but they were chewing gum. They were chewing. It seems every single player had a wad of bubble gum in his mouth during the interview.
Yeah, it's become a ritual
about?
In baseball, chewing, not only gum, but tobacco, tobacco chew. But I don't know where that started, Pete, but it's part of baseball. It really is, the ritual of chewing.
Way back.
Yeah, and sunflower seeds, spitting seeds. Yeah.
Sunflower
That's
seeds,
part of it
I can
too.
Understand. Well, I wanted to talk about some of the goals, obviously getting some of these college players recognized and ready to be recognized, I guess, is one of the goals. The others, and Gary, you've mentioned this a couple of times, what coaches mm-hmm. come up now? You would be a good training ground for a future coach?
Oh, yeah. It's good for on their resume
umpires?
That they coached in the Alaska Baseball League. And we've had coaches that have coached for us now are head coaches for major universities.
Really?
So it's a developmental league, like I said, not only for them, for umpires. And even for radio people, we have radio people who do our games that want to move on in a profession.
Right.
So it's an all around place to start your career
sports
if you want to stay in baseball.
There was a couple of kids who did Matsu Minor video blogs a while back.
Oh, that was a couple of years ago. Yeah.
They were great. They were totally enthusiastic about.
Did you see the one where they imitated me?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, God.
But they put them on YouTube, and you could watch the Masters on YouTube.
It's probably still there.
Yeah.
Well, what are some of the really crazy things that happened? Moose on the field, planes landing, and
planes crashing.
Well, that was scary.
Yeah, that was against the Gold Panthers, and a small plane came in directly over the field. And if you know where the soccer field is next to the baseball field, he just crash-landed right in that soccer field, just missing the grandstand.
Yeah, it's on.
I was watching it, and I thought, gee, it's going to go right into the grandstand, and I just had this image. But he managed to veer off. But that's I think that's rated in the top five of bloopers on ESPN, that plane crash. Isn't it, Pete?
Yeah.
That still is being shown.
Fox Sports had that.
Yeah.
What about weather? Alaska weather can be real undependable. Like last summer, we had a glorious summer for baseball. Maybe this summer, we haven't had a lot of rain, but it's been really overcast.
Mm-hmm.
What does it take to cancel a game in Alaska?
Well, some GMs will do anything to play. You got to remember, usually the night's a promotion. Someone paid money to have their name out there and giveaways and all this. So you really try to get the game in. If it's not raining and the field is, like now that the Mulcahy Field is turf, it's a lot easier for them to play games when it's inclement weather.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have natural grass, it's a little more difficult. If it's not raining, I'm going to try to get my game in.
Well, Pete's right. We have a limited season. It's not only the sponsorship, which is important, but when you look at when we start rainouts, and like the doubleheader we had yesterday, Pete, we start backing up, backing up, backing up. And there have been years we have not been able to complete our season because of the rainouts. So we make a very big effort to get those games in. And even if we don't tend to call them till game time or delay them, and that's a problem for radio stations that broadcast our games. Is it called? Is it not called? And I said, well, not yet. So we try very hard. And Pete mentioning the turf, the artificial turf in Mulcahy has helped us a lot to maintain our integrity of our schedule.
Mulcahy is artificial turf?
It has field turf.
I never
it was
even
put
realized
in,
that.
Just put it in.
Just put it in new, brand new.
Man,
come on down to the stadium. It's really nice, and it plays well, but it's different. And it you don't have to mow it. And, you know, you don't have to water it. We spent a lot of time fertilizing it, but that's about it.
Well, I'd like to remind our listeners once again that if you have questions about the Alaska Baseball League for Pete Christopher or Gary Lichtenstein, you can call at 550-8433, or outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or send us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember, all the information about today's show on the Alaska Baseball League and the Scout Showcase starting this weekend can be found at kska.org. Well, we're winding it down now, and so I would like to talk a little bit about the goals of the season and the future of the ABL in general. I know that there is the National Baseball Congress in Wichita, Kansas, and I guess whatever team comes out on top in this Alaska season is heads down to Wichita for playoffs. So I know the Mat-Su Miners have won a national championship a couple of times, Pete.
Right. Me personally, I don't like. It's too expensive for me to go. I went in 2004 when we won the league. I took the team, but when you factor in the airfare to add that other extra leg on the ticket, the hotels, the rental cars, the meal money that you pay the players, it adds up. And you don't play at 7 o'clock every night. You can play at 2 in the morning. You can play at 8 in the morning. A lot of thunderstorms. Games get delayed. It's just too expensive for us to go. I wish the NBC, the National Baseball Congress in Wichita, would give money to the Alaska League teams to offset their cost. I mean, you could spend $40,000, and the most you're going to win in purse is $16,000. So that's kind of hard to do,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
From my standpoint. You know, a couple of teams love the tournament. If they got the money to go, more power to them, but we never have the money.
You know, I can speak for the Bucks that we also feel that it's too costly to maintain that NBC tournament, and we're looking at close to $50,000, and the more you win in Wichita, the more you spend, because the more hotel, the more food, the more logistics you have to deal with. NBC is a tremendous tournament. It's it used to be a scout showcase. That was one of the reasons we built this scout showcase, so the teams could be exposed without having to go to Wichita, and the scouts seemed very happy about that. So in many ways, the need to go to Wichita for the Bucks has been reduced. It's not necessarily for exposure. And you ask many of these players, because of the College World Series being pushed so far ahead and because of early school, we forget sometimes that these are student athletes. And when they go to Wichita, it really squeezes them. You know, we've had players who couldn't go because they had to get apartments in college, or their academic advisor wanted to see them, or they had to take some tests to opt out of classes, and they couldn't fit that in. And the squeeze of our season has become so short that respecting that student-athlete component is important to the Bucks, and Wichita gets in the way.
They're flat-out tired by the end. By August 1st, they're beat. Don't forget, Division One kids, and that's what this league is made up mostly of, Division One ball players. You know, they play fall ball for 3 months. They have Christmas break in January. They're right into their spring season, and they play 56 games. If they go to the College World Series or the regionals and all that, I mean, it'll take them till the middle of June. Then they come up here and play for another month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, if they're on semesters, they're going to be starting school like the middle of August. So it doesn't leave them much time
to
wind down.
And that squeeze has been increasing. And they don't see their family. They don't see their friends. And these are serious players. I respect them tremendously. They come to Alaska to play, because many college athletes would want to go home for the summer and just relax.
Yeah. So maybe what's a suggestion to find something else? I mean, the way the ABL went through some growing pains and some rivalries and there was a 2 years where there was two Alaska baseball leagues for a little while. I mean, would there be a remedy, maybe a playoffs in Seattle for some other league or something?
Well, for the Bucks, closer? We've tried other playoffs. We went to San Luis Obispo a few years ago for what was called the Wasabi Tournament. It was a great location. The tournament itself wasn't run well. We did win it, by the way. But if that was a location, we scouted that for the league. We tried that out, but it wasn't something that we'd recommend. But, yeah, we're always constantly looking for another type of tournament. We look at Hawaii. Hawaii has a great tournament. Problem is they started too early. We're not finished with our season by the time the Hawaii Invitational has started. There's been some discussion, Pete, about starting our own tournament here in Alaska.
Right, field, yeah.
Inviting outside teams here.
How about Canada?
Well, that's...
Anything going over there? You could have a little international rivalry.
Ellen, you want to be our commissioner?
I'll be on your board. Well, it's just a suggestion.
No, it's good.
How about you, Pete? Any ideas on that other than...
No, I think a tournament up here would be great.
Yeah.
You know, you start getting into the rainy season, you know, second, third, fourth weeks of August, but you could probably have a five-day or a one-week thing going.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you don't conflict with American Legion, I think they're going back to, instead of the first week in August, they're going back to the last week in July, I think. Right, Gary?
Yeah.
So
it's for the
field would be available.
They have a tournament using Mulcahy. Mulcahy is a user field. It's not owned by the Bucks or the Pilots. It's a city-owned park, and we have other users besides us.
Oh, yeah. I see a lot of people. So do you think the heyday of the ABL was the 80s and the 90s? I'm looking at just from the website. The Bucks had something like 17 players signed with professional leagues in the 80s, you know? Is the ABL peaked? Is it expanding? Could it be better? What do you think?
Well, like I said, there's so many leagues now. A lot of kids don't want to travel up to Alaska. But the ones that are smart and want to play professional baseball, they want to come up here because they know how good the league is. And that's a plus I think we'll always have. And we work hard to make it a good experience for the kid. Because if he goes back to his school and says, man, it was a lousy summer, it was bad this, bad that, you're not going to get players from that program anymore. So I think we all work hard to make it a great experience for the athlete.
That's 100% true, Pete. Our athletes, our players are our best PR for future players,
mm-hmm.
saying what a wonderful time they had with each individual team and the experience they had up here.
Right. Well, they obviously could not get some of the post-game fun in other places, like, you know, playing till all hours in the middle of the night with the sun still up and then being able to go fishing, you know, for a couple of hours before they get to some sleep.
Yeah, it's an incredible experience, and some of them have never seen before or experienced Alaska in terms of the weather, the wildlife, and the fishing, and just the experience here.
I would say, though, in general, do most of the college players who come here, are they dead set on a professional career, or do most of them sort of figure, well, this is my youth, but I'm going to have something else for my adulthood? What's your feeling on that?
I would say that not every kid, obviously, is going to make it, and they know it. Some know it. But the reason they're here is to make it.
Mm-hmm.
They have some dream, whether it be minor league, whether it be just touching baseball and some experience, maybe just being an assistant coach down the line, having the experience in the Alaska Baseball League. To me, and most of the players that play for us, show me that they are serious about baseball. Because like I said, Ellen, they could be home with their partners, with their family, with their friends, but they choose to come all the way here and play a grueling schedule. Now, it's obvious that most of them won't make it. Most of them won't. But if you look around the major leagues, I would say generally, Pete, almost every team has a representative of someone that played through this league.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Every
yeah.
major league team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still considered a highly thought of scouting grounds mm-hmm. for the major leagues.
Would you advise, though, a young man that, you know, as people who want to go into music or acting, you know, their parents always say, oh, get something else to fall back on. I mean, would you advise a young athlete to maybe get something else in case? Well,
usually if they get drafted after their junior year and they sign, money gets put in escrow in the commissioner's office for his senior year of college. Now, a lot of these guys, when they sign after their junior year, it takes them a long time to go back to school and get their degree. Mm-hmm. Some guys do it, but most of them don't. It takes them a long time. So there are ways for them to, if after 3 or 4 years they don't see themselves moving up in the organization or they get released, they can still go back and finish that last year of college and get their degree.
Hmm. So mm-hmm. they've got quite a few options. I didn't realize they came up here as freshmen and sophomores. I was thinking they were maybe later on in there.
Well, we have a few juniors, and we're allowed to sign unsigned senior, meaning undrafted senior. But generally, when you're a senior and if you haven't been drafted, your motivation to continue in baseball is sort of shortened a little bit.
Yeah, there was a very sort of touching segment in the documentary, Touching the Game, about a young man who did not get drafted, Todd Seebeck, after winning all kinds of recognition and just wowing everybody and then not getting picked. But he's turned to music now. There's another, there's a career.
Well, you know, I knew Todd personally, played for the Pirates, but he loved to fish.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a fisherman and a half, so he enjoyed his stay up here tremendously.
Well, we'll see. So we've only got a little bit of time left, a couple of minutes. What's next? Gary, the Bucks have a game tonight. When and where?
Bucks have a doubleheader facing the league-leading Alaska Gold Panthers of Fairbanks starting at 6 o'clock. They're both seven-inning games. Our league rules say a doubleheader, each game is 7 innings. And we have lights, Pete, so the lights will probably be on tonight.
And so, Pete, Matsu Miners are meeting.
Yeah, we have two games against Athletes in Action tonight and tomorrow night, and then we start the showcase Friday night.
Friday night, and those guys there will be there with the little speed guns. Now, so the scouts, they're all going to be in Anchorage, right?
Yes,
right.
Okay, so all the teams will be playing each other off in Anchorage, and
mm-hmm.
for the next
people who visit Mulcahy, you just go under the grandstand, and you'll see them right in the middle of the grandstand.
Oh yeah, it's very exciting.
Can't miss them.
You can hear the cheers. It's like really like old time America with the guys selling peanuts and deer in the stands,
and the smell of hot dogs.
And the little kids playing everywhere, and people just, they really get into it. And then the mascots, you got
we have a parrot, a pirate parrot.
How about you, Pete? They have a mascot.
Yeah, we have Matt and Sue Miner.
Where have they been lately, Pete?
I don't know. It's too hot to put them on.
We got a Amber Alert on our Beekman. it is hard to get them on. But it's a fun experience at the ballpark, and ball players I know appreciate the fans, and it's one of the few places that these young kids can stand out the dugout and clubhouse and get them to sign their baseballs, and they will have a future major leaguer sign their baseballs.
Oh, for sure.
And that's neat.
Yeah, and Pete, anything else you want to say? We've got just a few seconds left.
No, it's just I love baseball, and if you love baseball, even if you don't love baseball, going to a game is great experience up here, because it's fun to follow these guys when they, you know, like if you're a freshman, they're playing up here as freshmen. In 2 years, they're going to get drafted, sign, and go into minor league baseball, and you can follow their careers.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing. You look at some of those photos on the websites and like, oh my gosh, I've seen that guy's name in the paper so many times, and he was here when he was a kid, you know. So Gary Lichtenstein, Pete Christopher, thank you so much for joining us here on Hometown Alaska. And remember, folks, Hometown Alaska airs Wednesdays at 2. Join us next week when Kathleen McCoy will talk about the 75th anniversary of the Matsu colonists. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.